I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, Israel forms a new coalition government. U.S. has little influence in Iraq a decade after invasion. A shaky trade relationship between Iran and India. And a Muslim organization extends its cooperation to the new pope.
This pope, I think, is a man of humility, someone who is strong in terms of social justice and working with the poor of the world.
It's all ahead. Israeli political parties have reached a coalition agreement clearing the way for a new government and some top-level international diplomacy as U.S. President Barack Obama prepares to visit. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
It took a weakened Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nearly 6 weeks to form a new Israeli government, barely beating a Saturday deadline. Mr. Netanyahu won national elections in January, but his right-wing Likud party lost ground to moderate secular parties, which set down tough demands. For the first time in years, ultra-Orthodox parties are out of the government. Israeli analyst Gerald Steinberg says that means a coalition with a more domestic agenda, led by ending military draft exemptions and stipends for the ultra-Orthodox.
It's going to tackle those domestic issues, that's the goal at least, in terms of the distribution of the burden, both military and financial. So it's going to be very much inward-looking.
But when Mr. Netanyahu announced the coalition deal, he noted that the broader Middle East is in turmoil.
אנחנו עומדים בפני אתגרים ביטחוניים, הם גם מדיניים כבירים, אין פה שום הפרזה.
He said the new government must tackle major security and political challenges. He did not elaborate, but in previous statements, he has named them as Iran's controversial nuclear program, the danger of serious chemical weapons falling into the hands of Islamic terror groups, and reviving peace talks with the Palestinians. Mr. Netanyahu says Iran will top the agenda when U.S. President Barack Obama visits Israel next week. Iran says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, but Israel and the United States believe the Islamic Republic is developing nuclear weapons that could threaten the existence of the Jewish state. Steinberg believes the Prime Minister will tell President Obama that if international diplomacy and sanctions fail, Israel is prepared to take military action against Iran on its own.
As we get closer to the summer, and if we see progress towards an Iranian nuclear weapon, Netanyahu is going to say, if the Americans don't act, if there's no international military action, we're going to have to act unilaterally. And he will get broad support from the Israeli public and most of the Israeli political system, including within his own coalition.
Domestic issues and Iran have pushed the Palestinian issue to the back burner. But Mr. Netanyahu says reviving peace talks after a four-year stalemate is a priority. Steinberg does not expect any breakthroughs.
Well, we're certainly going to see some sort of negotiating effort because Obama's going to push for it. It's something that, for PR reasons, the Israelis have to show that they're interested. So we'll see some movement in that direction, but probably not much substance.
The Palestinians have refused to return to the negotiating table until Israel stops all settlement expansion, a demand rejected by the previous Israeli government. But there is speculation that with President Obama coming and a more moderate coalition in power, Israel might be willing to make concessions on the settlements. Mr. Obama will discuss these issues with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas when they meet in the West Bank next week. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
U.S. President Barack Obama has reiterated his determination to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. As VOA senior White House correspondent Dan Robinson reports, Mr. Obama and U.S. officials also spoke about broad objectives of his visit to Israel, the West Bank, and Jordan next week.
In an interview with Israel's Channel 2 television, Mr. Obama said it would take Iran over a year or so to develop a nuclear weapon, adding, as he put it, "Obviously, we don't want to cut it too close." It was not clear whether he meant that U.S. and Israeli timelines agree about any so-called breakout decision by Iran to proceed to development of a weapon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said recently Iran is getting close to passing an Israeli red line marking that point. Mr. Obama said diplomacy would yield a more lasting solution, but reiterated his determination to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear bomb.
When I say that all options are on the table, all options are on the table, and the United States obviously has significant capabilities. But our goal here is to make sure that Iran does not possess a nuclear weapon that could threaten Israel or could trigger an arms race in the region.
Mr. Obama repeated that the window of opportunity for a diplomatic solution is not infinite, adding Iran can still utilize an open door. U.S. officials spoke about broader objectives of Mr. Obama's Middle East trip that begins Wednesday in Jerusalem and takes him to Ramallah in the West Bank and Jordan. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Dan Shapiro said there is excitement in Israel, where people also recognize a need for leaders to discuss critical issues such as Iran and Syria.
I think they also are hopeful that the consultations between our leaders early in their new terms will chart the course for making progress on all of those issues in the months and in the years ahead.
Mr. Obama will deliver a major address to Israelis in Jerusalem, but he will not bring any new initiative for moving Israelis and Palestinians closer to direct negotiations on a two-state solution. White House official Ben Rhodes said the president sees the trip as the start of a broad conversation about important decisions ahead and said Israel needs to consider changes in the region.
Israel needs to take into account the changing dynamic and the need to reach out to public opinion across the region as it seeks to make progress on issues like Israeli-Palestinian peace and broader Arab-Israeli peace.
President Obama will not be accompanied by his wife Michelle on the trip, but will have with him Secretary of State John Kerry, who recently traveled extensively in the region. Dan Robinson, VOA News, The White House.
President Barack Obama's withdrawal of most troops from Iraq and the scaling down of U.S. diplomats in Baghdad closes the defining foreign policy campaign of his predecessor, President George W. Bush. A decade after the invasion, VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns reports on what the United States got out of the war in Iraq.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
10 years after President Bush sent troops to Iraq, Washington appears to have little influence over what goes on there. Shiite Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki continues to dominate Sunni opponents with what Johns Hopkins University professor Ruth Wedgwood says are few repercussions.
So there really is nobody for them to worry about. And Maliki seems quite content to have a perpetually unsettled Iraq, in which the Sunni will sooner or later find their means to take revenge. But for the moment, it's a Shia nation.
With the U.S. handover, Wedgwood says Prime Minister Maliki is free to do as he likes.
I think when we withdrew so completely, albeit leaving this carapace of an empty embassy behind, it really was taken by Maliki as a kind of do-what-you-wish signal.
Especially in Baghdad's pursuit of better relations with neighboring Iran.
Well, Maliki, I think, has always been under the sway of the mullahs and Iran. He has made no secret of that. And he's more or less gotten away with it.
That's a problem for the Obama administration in enforcing sanctions against Iran's nuclear program and in Syria, where Iran is backing embattled President Bashar al-Assad. U.S. Institute of Peace analyst Steve Heidemann says Baghdad is taking sides in Syria against the United States.
They have been permitting overflights from Iran, which the U.S. would like them to stop. They have been providing other kinds of support to the Assad regime and have turned something of a blind eye as Iraqi Shia, who are moving into Syria to support the regime, are crossing the Iraqi-Syrian border.
Heidemann says Syria's war risks further undermining Iraq.
And it is sharpening sectarian divisions within those neighboring countries in ways that could have very, very troubling consequences for stability in those countries. And I think Iraq is one of the countries most at risk of instability as a result of the Syrian conflict.
U.S. firms have profited from the privatization of most Iraqi oil, but even there, divisions persist between the government in Baghdad and semi-autonomous Kurdish leaders in the north. Scott Stearns, VOA News at the State Department.
India's rice exports to Iran have been rising since Tehran agreed to accept payment in India's local currency for its oil. India wants to use this money to fund its exports to Iran. But as Anjana Pasricho reports from New Delhi, efforts to step up trade between the two countries continue to face several hurdles due to Western sanctions on Tehran over its nuclear program.
A delegation from the All India Rice Exporters Association is getting ready to visit Tehran in early April to see how to strengthen business. The visit comes amid a recent surge in exports of rice to Iran. From April to December last year, Iran imported more than $725 million worth of rice, up 20% from the previous year. India has been one of Iran's biggest rice suppliers for many years. But business grew after New Delhi began to pay Tehran for oil, partly in its local currency. These rupee resources, which are piling up in an Indian bank, are being used to fund Indian exports to Tehran. Rice traders say the arrangement has ended the uncertainty over payments that arose due to Western sanctions on Iran. Vijay Setia heads the All India Rice Exporters Association.
There are some issues still there, but people are aggressive in selling, and you see, if the buyer makes money, he is a little more aggressive to sell. So the rice prices have gone up in India, and the Indian exporters are making good money.
Rice traders are not the only ones eyeing the Iranian market. Indian pharmaceutical companies are also trying to increase exports to Iran amid a reported shortage of several medicines in that country. Sugar, tea, and iron and steel are some of the other items which India sells to Tehran. However, India's exports are worth far less than its oil imports from Iran, which amount to about $1 billion a month. New Delhi wants to increase trade with Iran, partly so that the rupees which are accumulating in India for oil payments can be used to finance exports. But a refusal by many insurers to give coverage to shipments to Tehran is posing fresh hurdles. Rafiq Ahmed is president of the Federation of Indian Export Organization, which has been urging Indian companies to step up exports to Iran. He says trade with Iran increased by 11% last year, but is not growing as much as expected.
Definitely the sanctions are creating a problem, because not all everybody is want to take a risk of not having insurance and everything. It is not increasing as much as we wanted it to increase.
There are also fears that India's oil imports from Iran could face further problems because domestic insurance companies have expressed concerns about giving coverage to refineries which process the oil. New Delhi, which has friendly relations with Iran, is its second biggest customer for oil, although oil imports have dropped by about 20% in response to pressure from the United States. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
The Council on American-Islamic Relations is extending a hand of cooperation to the new pontiff. The civil rights organization congratulates Pope Francis on his election and offers support to the Catholic Church in efforts of peace. We spoke about the gesture with the group's communications director, Ibrahim Hooper.
I think the possibility for better relations between the Roman Catholic Church and the Muslim community worldwide are possible right now. We believe that this Pope, I think, is a man of humility, someone who is strong in terms of social justice and working with the poor of the world, and I think that will appeal to a lot of Muslims. I think there are a lot of areas of cooperation, particularly in terms of promoting family values and social justice that Muslims and Catholics can work together on for the foreseeable future.
It's nice to hear such optimism about the future of the Muslim-Christian relationship.
Well, I think there are Muslims and Catholics share a lot of beliefs in terms of strengthening the family, working for social justice in the world, promoting peace and mutual understanding. So these commonalities are something that can be built upon, and we have worked with the Catholic community in the past on these issues, and we hope to do so in the future.
Well, where are some of the rough spots that you would like to have smoothed out?
Well, I think it's better to focus on the positive at this point. Obviously, there have been disagreements in the past on a number of passing issues, but I think as two of the largest faith communities on the planet, I think it's incumbent upon us to work together for the betterment of humanity.
Could you possibly tell us one or two of your projects with the Christian community?
Well, we've worked with Catholics, even going back as far as 1994 on women's issues, promoting the freedom of religion, promoting family values. So it's been a fairly productive relationship over the years at various levels, all the way from the local churches and mosques up to international and national leaders.
Ibrahim Hooper, National Communications Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations. This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.